All right, gentlemen. Good work. Sorry for the...
Do you want to ask him yourself? Okay. My father has inspirational wisdom for Jim Collison. So
nice. I'm leaving the recorder on.
I'm going to go watch The Mentalist, and I'm going to leave you with his new idea of the future.
Oh, good. I like it. Bring him on. So you stream. This is a treat. You get to hear from Christian's dad. Christian's dad, how are you?
I'm just fine, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you great.
Good.
Hi, Christian's dad.
So Christian tells me you have a revolutionary breakthrough for us.
104. I was just listening to what you were saying about cell phones, and you didn't think there'd be much changing in the future.
No,
and then
I
you
don't...
were talking about tablets, and I just... the thought kind of popped into my head, and maybe a question to pose for everybody to think about, maybe as a topic of discussion for next week. Would you rather have an Evo 4G like this with, a 4.8-inch screen, which is pretty decent? Or would you rather have a 7-inch tablet with 4G or 3G connectivity for probably about the same price, where you could Skype with the tablet? And even if you paid the Skype charges, the fees would probably come out to about the same. So,
yeah.
You know, even if we're maybe talking about a 5-inch tablet, a 6-inch tablet, a 7-inch tablet, at some point, what we're doing with cell phones and what we're doing with tablets, you're going to see some convergence. And with the explosion in the 4G services, you're almost, you have to realize that the necessity for a voice service versus a data service that's being packaged separately with different plans. Why do you need a unique voice service if you've got this high-speed data service and you can make calls through a service like Skype? So, you know, the classical cell phone, as we're thinking of it, is really old technology that's really on its way out. And what you're seeing with what's becoming more and more functionality in your tablet class is really going to come down and meet that cell phone and make it obsolete as time goes on.
So functionally, though, as you think about the use of a cell phone, this works really well because I can hold it up to my ear, right? We've been holding phones like this for 100 years, right? So
Yeah. If
people switch to a tablet, how do they replace, or at least as you see it, how do they replace that speaking thing that they do? They're not going to hold a 7-inch tablet up to their ear, obviously.
No. How about a Bluetooth headset?
Yeah, well, the headset idea, or the earpiece idea, has been out. It.
Yeah, I mean, we got a generation of kids that grew up with an iPod and with the buds in the ears all day long.
Yeah.
So like I say, their level of acceptance of that technology and even what we're doing with headphones, yeah, you're not going to carry around a complete headset headphone. Yeah.
No, but I mean, even those earpieces, right, for the last five or 10 years, folks have tried to get away with. And really, that technology has not taken hold at all. I mean, we kind of make fun of people who walk around all day with that phone in their ear.
Yeah.
Does it? Do you think that makes a comeback if that interacts with the tablet? And
even if it's not a Bluetooth, even if it's there's something that you wire it and put a small earpiece in. I just think that at some point, if there's money to be saved, you know, instead of, you know, let's look at it this way. I got a cell phone in my pocket. I'd like to have a tablet. And basically, if I'm going to go outside my home, I probably want both of those things. But then I have to ask myself, gee, if I'm going to take the tablet and I can make phone calls with it, do I want to lug the phone around too? In other words, if I get the same functionality out of a slightly more useful device, I'm probably going to make that sacrifice to buy. I've found more and more comfortable headset arrangements as I go along.
Yeah.
And at some point, I'm going to go to the tablet and forget the cell phone.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be able to, especially as we get older and we don't see as well.
Right.
The 7-inch screen is going to be a lot more readable than the 4-inch screen.
Yeah.
So I just think that.
But does a 7-inch screen still fit in your pocket? It fits in a jacket pocket nicely. You know, if I have a coat, That, but or, it struggles a little bit to fit in my front pocket.
Or that's a small challenges, isn't it? A small carry bag, something yeah. like, you know, like I say, I just,
yeah,
I just think that at some point, you're gonna wanna, if you get a tablet, and you're gonna hit the road. Did I die?
No, you're there.
No, you're there.
Yeah, it's Skype. It freezes from time to time. We completely crashed Skype tonight. So,
I just think that step and think about it. 9 times out of 10, you're gonna go out of the house. You got a small tablet. You're gonna take it with you. Especially if it's one that is tied into the cellular network, where you have connectivity of that tablet. How often are you gonna go out without it? If it becomes your primary,
sure,
you know what I'm saying? If you're using it to interface with your home network, you're getting your email through it, and it's all set up and it's all functional. You know, a small tablet's something you're gonna walk out of the house. You say, "Oh no, I gotta take my tablet with me." And it's just like we do with our cell phones today. They become a necessary thing as you have them. Sure. Just like I'm on Christian's 10-inch triple E PC here. Yeah. His netbook. Yeah. Kid never leaves the house without it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he takes it to school, right? It's part of his life.
It goes to school with him. Anytime we go out of the house on a road trip, it goes with him, visiting relatives, visiting friends, anywhere he knows he's going to be able to patch into a network. Yep. The network comes out. He's got a little small carry bag. It fits right in and boom, he's got his little shoulder bag and he's off and running. So like I say, if he was able to make phone calls with this, if he had permanent, 3G connection that he could tap into a data plan and Skype with it, he'd have a set of headphones on here and he'd be mic'd up all the time.
Do you think that's a little bit too connected though?
Yeah, but I think that's what we do. I mean, I don't know. I get up in the morning and first thing I do is go down to the basement and fire up the computer, check my email.
Yeah. I know what you're saying.
Hey, real quick, Gordon. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Are we the board? Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, man. We'll let you go.
All right.
See you, Gordon. Thanks for joining us.
So, see you, Andrew, Brian.
See you, Gordon. See you. Gordon's got to drop. We can continue to talk about this because this is kind of interesting. That Andrew would ask the question: is that too connected?
Yeah. See, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I we had a social gathering, sort of like a tweet up or whatever you want to call it, the other night. And, you know, first thing everyone does is they get there is, you know, check in on Foursquare. And then, you know, the topic then goes to who uses what device, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And my wife pulled out a comment, I guess. And, you know, her comment was when does technology stop people being people? And, you know, I think the point she was trying to make is, you know, some people are, and, you know, this is just a throwaway statement, so it's not directed, but some people are almost becoming impersonal, you know, because you'll be sitting there having a conversation with someone and, you know, oh, look, you know, the phone comes out and they drift off while they're talking.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you lose that intimate contact.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, we've got a rule in our house. It's only the two of us, but we got a rule between the two of us that, you know, if the phone rings through during dinner and unless it's a, you know, a critical work call and, you know, something's just exploded, then, you know, we sort of say, you know, hey, I'll call you back. We're in the middle of dinner or something like that. Whereas I think if you're always connected and you've always got the device with you, we're going to start losing the social network the social fabric that sort of holds us all together.
Yeah.
Right. And I think each individual has to, you know, decide what level of control that they need to exercise in order to, you know, I force myself to get up out of the chair and go out and walk outside every so often. Otherwise, I'm stuck at the computer all day. But, and again, you know, I can remember my father who wouldn't let me use a calculator because, you know, I would never learn how to do math properly. And now, my kids come to school and the first thing the teachers say is you must have a TI 90 whatever calculator to take this class. So I think that we're looking at technology influencing society and behavior. And for you and I, maybe this isn't going to be a big change, but for the next generation and the generation after that, they're going to grow up with new technologies, with more miniaturization, more horsepower, more integration into their daily lives than we're seeing right now.
Yeah.
So inevitably it's going to, you know, permeate the culture.
Yeah. I think that's a good topic.
For better or worse, who knows? But it, you know, how many of us want to go plow a field tomorrow morning with a couple of ox in front and, you know, the iron plow and grab the reins?
Yeah.
You know, well, everybody.
Funny you mentioned that.
Well, I'm just saying, everybody likes to poo-poo the evils of technology, but how many people are out there with the sickle, you know, and crushing their own wheat to make some bread? I mean, no, they want to go down to the store and complain about the price.
Yeah. Well, it does bring up, I think, Andrew, what you're saying is I think it does bring up this social dilemma. Sarah just sent me a Skype message and said, I think it does bring up some ethical, and ethical is a little strong word for me in that, but it does bring up some social dilemmas on how we relate to each other. And I hear that all the time from folks who say, Facebook and Twitter are kind of ruining our social fabric. And I don't know. I don't know if I buy that. You know, since I've started this, or since I've been doing this podcasting stuff for the last couple years, and you know, I think I spent a good amount of time socially with guys. Now they don't live in my town, right? I know Christian pretty well now because Christian and I have talked quite a bit, you know, over Skype. We've done work together. Andrew, we're getting to know you. I know. Yeah. I think of like John Zadler, who does the Home Server show with me. I know John better than I know some of my friends that live in town here. My social relationships, I don't know if I have less of them. I think they just take a little different spin. I'm still getting to know people. I'm still out talking to people. I do a lot of stuff. It's just we're doing this via Skype, right? You're you know, in New York, and I'm in Omaha, and Andrew, you're in Melbourne. And we're having this conversation like we would if you were in my kitchen, you know? And so I can't say that technology is tearing the social fabric. It's changing it, that's for sure, the way we relate. I'm not sure if that's if it's necessarily damaging it as long as we continue to have relationships. I think where it gets scary is when you turn in on yourself and you're no longer talking to people in the outside world.
I think that's a lot of what I observe in that, especially in that particular circle. And I think it's, you know, I mean, we don't have kids, but it's something that we're aware of, that when we look at like my nieces and nephews and things like that, we look at them and you know, they're not the sorts of kids that are in front of a computer or a PlayStation or something all day. But we look at our neighbors' kids, and our neighbors' kids don't have the social graces that the kids who aren't in front of a device all the time have.
Yeah. Although, well, you know, let me jump in real quick, because Christian's one of the best socially adept kids at 15, who's brilliant, bright, and amazing. And he spends a lot of time in front of the computer, I know. And maybe he's an anomaly, right? But
Daddy is.
because he's an amazing kid. I mean, he really is. He interacts with us fantastically. He's got... You know,
he blows my head off with the stuff that he does. I mean,
so he kind of breaks the stereotype.
Yeah. Yeah. And believe it or not, I mean, I'm his father, so I get to brag, but he's every bit as engaging on a personal level. This kid can work a room as well as the mayor of New York. Yeah. I'm serious. I mean, he's just got. Nice. An outgoing, engaging, and he's well-mannered. I mean, he knows how to say please and thank you and excuse me. And he's a very courteous and a type of kid that'd give you the shirt off his back. So, you know,
something to be really, really proud of, because there are so many kids out there these days who just don't adjust like that.
Well, I had a discussion with my sister the other night because she had a problem with one of her children. And my philosophy has always been that, and I told my wife this when we started raising our kids, that I would never let my children abuse use me emotionally, physically, or verbally. And yeah. and I refuse to let them abuse me in any way. So, you know, if they're cross with me or disrespectful, I just tell them, no, I'm sorry. I don't respond to that. And I purposely, I stop talking to them until they come to me and apologize.
So they
really get a sense of, you know, that's just not appropriate behavior. And I expect them to behave that way with other people as well.
Yeah.
So it's parenting and, and how, and again, our home is a network lab because I got into it in
Listen, you're like the dream dad, you know,
for the
IT guy. Yeah. My, we've got computers all over our house and it's the same kind of thing here. And my kids are very tech savvy. I mean, they get that. And they understand it as well. I mean, it's a real benefit for them to interact with all this technology. Certainly, Christian takes advantage of everything you've given him and learns.
He does.
Yeah, he's really good at that part.
Takes it. He went by me about 3 years ago, and he just keeps right on going. And all I do is say, "What do you need? You know, what do you need next?" But the other
thing that means that means his schooling's right as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's got like a 98 average at the toughest school in our area.
Yeah,
he goes to a private Catholic school that just as demanding as can be, in every respect, behavior, academics, you name it. So
so that I don't put up with the crap that a government school puts up with. So you're ahead from the start because he's got the grounding here.
No, I refuse to subject my kids to public school.
Yeah.
Just wasn't going to happen. So.
Well, anyways, you've done a great job with Christian, and he's a little bit of the anomaly in that, and maybe in that space, but a great example of where you can. I mean, he's totally submersed in technology, but he is handling it well. He speaks well. He's, like you said, he's polite. He does those kind of things. So, you got whatever you're doing. And we kind of did this in our house. I told my kids, we want to find what you're best at, and then I just want to get as much of that in your hands as I possibly can.
Exactly.
And
right.
So we've with some it's been technology, with others it's been art, with some it's been language arts, some of those kind of things. My second son speaks a language or two, and may do that for the government here at some point, but. We just encourage them to do those kind of things. And I think if there's one thing you can do from a parent is find out what they're good at and then just give them as much stuff. And so good job on that.
Thank you.
I'll applaud you on that as well. Well, hey, back to the cell phone idea though, real quick. let's talk about this some more because I think it's interesting. I think that's an interesting topic. So you spurred on that, at least in my book, and we'll have you back on. I've been telling Christian for a long time, we needed to have a segment where we just bring you in and talk to you. Now, we've been recording this, so this may show up in the wild.
No, that'd be fine.
But as long as you're okay with that. But
yes, absolutely.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that some more. I think when we talk about cell phones and we talk about the merger of, you know, will cell phones as we know them today merge into tablets? That's kind of what I heard you saying in that is you think that merger is coming along and we'll no longer have cell phones anymore. It'll all be in a tablet device.
Well, I think that there'll be people who just migrate to the tablet as their primary device. There will be people who still stay with a cell phone. But what I think will happen is that the cell providers will eliminate the voice-only service, and it'll all be just integrated internet traffic. And the voice will just track. It's just like at home. I mean, I've been on voice over IP for like 6 years now. And I got the Ooma device. I pay the $3.47 a month for the licensing or the federal fees, but that's it. You know, there's no phone bill anymore.
Right.
So it just piggybacks on my internet service.
Yeah.
Why would I pay Verizon? What is it? They want $60 a month for a telephone. It's crazy.
Right. Right.
So it's the same thing. If I can get a tablet with connectivity where I can basically do what we're doing now, Skype and make it as about as affordable as a cell phone. So, yeah, there might be some people who want both. But economically speaking, I'm going to have a choice for about the same amount of money. Do I want this or do I want that? And I'm probably going to opt for the small tablet that may not be quite as easy to carry,
okay,
but is going to be a ton more functional for the same value.
Yeah, so you'll concede the carrying, because I know there would be people who would say, I want to put the thing in my pocket. I don't want to have to hold it all the time or carry a container with, you know, carry it in a purse or a bag or a case.
This is the biggest thing out there right now, the Evo 4G, and I don't find it terribly big or cumbersome in my pocket.
No, but I think that's the size. This is the largest size, and maybe you could go with a 5-inch because I have a 4-inch screen. And I think this is about this, and maybe if you went to 5-inch, after that, it stops fitting in your pocket comfortably, right?
Yeah, I can't get in your jeans. It's too big.
Yeah, I think we've still got a ways to go to find where that biggest size is. In other words, what's the smallest tablet? What's the biggest phone? But I think both in technical functionality and size, there is a sweet spot in there that's a little bit bigger than today's cell phone and a little bit smaller than today's smaller tablets that is going to have a lot more horsepower and be more functional with a service plan that's probably at about the same price level as a cell phone.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm saying there's going to be choices to be made there. Yeah, some high-end people want the fancy phone. They'll go with everything. Right. But those of us who add the nickels and dimes at the end of the month are going to say, well, which, do I want this or do I want that? I'm retired. So, for me, if it doesn't fit quite into my pocket, I don't really care.
Yeah.
Not a big deal. Yeah. It's not like I got to tote it around with me at work all day.
Right.
Yeah. So,
well, even in that case, I find at where I work, I would carry it and set it on my desk. Or if I go to a meeting, it's going to go in front of me. Work isn't the problem. It's when I'm out and about in other places, when I'm, when I'm at church or when I'm hanging out with the kids or when I'm at a movie theater, where do I put it then? Do I set it on my lap? I think there's a carrying dilemma maybe at that point, if it's going to be your phone.
And at some point too, though, you go back to, well, maybe it's good to be without the phone in those situations.
Again,
there's a lot of those trade-off issues that need to be considered. And, I sometimes walk out of the house without my phone in my pocket and I go, oh, I forgot my phone. And then I go, so what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Right.
I'm offline for a while. Whoopee. Yeah, it's like, who cares?
Well, but some people get paid to be online, right? So you're retired. And I know there's some guys. Yeah. Andrew's one of them. And some of the guys that I work with, are required to be online. So they have to be. I'll be honest with you. I've shut my ringer off. I mean, I carry my phone all the time, but it would buzz literally every 30 seconds. I mean, And it got to the point it was raising my blood pressure. I mean, it was just that every time it would buzz, I'd be like, oh, God, get away from me. And so I shut it off. It's, it's on, but right, the ringer's off. And every 5 to 10 minutes when I control it, I control the tempo of it. And I pick the phone up and check for messages or look to see what happened. Now, that frustrates people who are trying to get a hold of me and they want me that second.
Yeah, you can train people that's not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And see, that's a question of resetting expectations. If you do that, if you answer every time it rings, people will expect that.
It's making a rod for your own back.
Yeah.
If you just get people into the habit, this guy's not always going to answer the phone. He may be in another call. He's busy. He's offline. Whatever. Then they start to feel comfortable with leaving that message and knowing that you'll get back to them.
Yeah,
it's an expectations game.
It is, and it's done wonders for my kind of my temperament during the day. I mean, I was just finding myself frustrated all the time and angry. And when my staff would come and ask for stuff, I'd get impatient. And it's kind of changed my demeanor. And in the sense that's like, it's okay. I'll get to my phone. The light blinks when I have a message. And so I can always just look at it. And if the light's blinking, then it means I need to pick it up. But I rule it not the other way around. So
I think that's important to adopt that attitude. And that's much what Andrew was saying. I think we need to teach our children that as well, that there is a proper time and a place and etiquette and circumstance where maybe if you're an on-call medical person that, yes, you need to answer as soon as it rings, that's appropriate. But in other circumstances, people can just wait and you can get back to them and you can actually give your undivided attention to the person that you're speaking with at the moment. And that's important.
Yeah, because that sucks in a conversation when you're talking to somebody and their phone rings and it just ends the conversation.
And I couldn't believe it when it happened and we got sucked into it, but we really got started down this path, believe it or not. The first thing that did that was call waiting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The most socially destructive, rude service ever put on society that accepted it without even thinking twice. Oh, wait a minute, I got a call.
Yeah.
when my sisters do that to me, I say, that's okay, just call me back when you want to talk to me. It's not a problem. And I hang up.
Right.
I don't, as soon as somebody puts me on call waiting, I hang up the phone.
Yeah.
So now they know that when they call me, I ain't going to put up with no call waiting.
Yeah.
If I'm second in line, don't bother calling me.
Right. Right.
And again, setting expectations.
It really is. And no one has said to me since I shut my ringer off, well, I shouldn't say no one, but I'm not getting a lot of feedback saying I can never get a hold of you. Right. I mean, so they'll call, I don't answer, they'll send me a text. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll look at the text and make the determination. Okay. Do I need to answer this right away? Is it an emergency? Is it something I can get back to within the hour? Can I wait for the end of the day? And it lets me kind of control that flow of information and not be controlled by it. So I think, as we talk about this social dilemma, I mean, I think this plays right into it.
Yep.
And
I think it's a great topic for conversation.
Yeah.
And I think it should start to be taught in the schools. I think it's really important that proper communications etiquette in today's technological environment is a topic that needs to be taught. Common courtesy, respect, whether it be in these online chat rooms, whether it be on Skype, whether it be on your cell phone, when is it appropriate, what's appropriate, and how do you manage it as opposed to letting it manage you. I think we need to teach that early.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Years ago, we would offer email etiquette classes. Even where I worked, we offered email etiquette because people struggle with that. You might be onto something there. I hadn't really thought of it that way, of teaching a class on kind of social networking, social whatever you want to call it, right, at this point. The place we find ourselves right now today with all the
modern
media.
Modern communications etiquette.
There you go.
Is really a general topic that needs to be refined and taught.
And get that figured out. And it's because my kids are interacting more with me these days via text. They get a hold of me at work where normally they'd never call me, right? I mean, that would never happen. And today I get texts from him and I text him back and we have some. You can have a meaningful conversation via text. And it means something. So if you're getting in a conversation some people poo-poo that, they're like, well, it's just another form of communication. Should you do all your parenting via text? Probably not. It's an effective form of communication done right.
If Christian school ever found out, they'd probably kill us both. But I get texts from him all day long while he's in school because they have a wireless network in the school building. And he gets on Skype and he starts keyboarding away and I answer him back. And we're in touch all day long while he's at school. And I love it. It's kind of nice. He's even had sessions where he's put on the microphone and the camera so I could see what was going on in the classroom.
Oh, that's cool.
So it is kind of neat. And the other issue that when Andrew was talking earlier, I thought of is that this technology has really been beneficial for families that are not geographically close together anymore. Where siblings, aunts, and uncles are now all over the country. To get into a session like this and be able to chat and see each other and talk about just the day's events, I think it's made those long distance relative interactions a little bit more frequent and a little bit closer to home than they were in the day of the telephone and you were paying long distance charges.
Sure. Sure. You know? Well, look, we have Andrew here in Melbourne, right?
Yep.
It's tomorrow afternoon there already, and we're having this conversation, and it works like, it works like he's across the kitchen table.
Yeah, it's wonderful. You
know? Exactly.
It really is, and we use it a lot for our family as well. And like I think I said earlier in the conversation, some of the guys that I podcast with, and you know, I've gotten to know Christian really well, and over the last 6 months as I've been working with him, you know, one of the reasons we paid for the group chat that allowed this kind of what we're doing tonight, and I wish we're working on figuring out a way to display this so that the audience can watch us interact.
Yes, in that this would chat. Be good.
But for $75 a year, I get the ability to Brian pitched in on it, Dave pitched in on it, and I pitched in on it. We get to see each other here in chat. Totally changed the dynamic of the podcast when we did it, when we had video available to us. And and we got to see you in the background doing jumping jacks, and so it's been good. Well, the night is late, Mr. Johnson. I appreciate you.
Gary,
I appreciate you jumping in, and we will definitely want to have you back on the show. Appreciate the feedback on that, and it was good chatting with you.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Okay, you streamers, we're going to shut her down. I've got a lot of producing to do on this show. So you guys have a great. I assume you're on holiday there at where you're at now.
Oh yeah,
Gary. Okay.
Yeah, actually, we're touring Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York, for a possible spot for my daughter, who's the complete opposite Christian. She's just, Christian, how does my computer work? that's home, same environment, same resources.
Isn't that crazy? How does that work?
But the kid can sing and dance like nobody's business.
So she's an artist. That's how she displays her art.
Yep.
In that sense, I've always thought, you know, everybody has an art side to them, and it doesn't mean it's painting. Right? Everybody thinks of art as painting, and so her, you know, she has the physical arts of dance and singing, and and some kids, you know, Christian can see code, and I don't. He was talking tonight. And we're like, how did you, dude? Is there anything you can't do?
It was like last week. I don't know if you're in the background at the time, Gary. He was telling us about his new PC, and I've just gone. Yeah, the whole lot just went straight through to the keeper for me. And you know what? I've worked in the industry for 20 years.
Well, I built my first one in 1983. And like I say, he blew by me about 3 years ago. And I just said, oh, man, is he in the fast lane? Because I dabble with programming here and there and try to do a few things. But I'll see him open like six windows on his screen and he's got his C# window open. He's got a machine language window open, and he's into these BIOSes now. He's tearing apart these BIOSes and reconstructing them and doing hex edits right at the machine level. And I'm just going, and he sees it like I can't read the screen as fast as he's editing and typing things in. And it's literally scary. And I'm not saying that just because I'm his father.
Yeah.
But literally, I'll be 60 this year. And honest to God, no BS. And it's not because I'm his dad. He is the smartest person I've ever known.
Yeah, he's a smart kid.
He really is.
I'm still trying to figure out why he talks to me, by the way.
He's a down-to-earth kid. He's a people person, and he'll give you the shirt off his back, the time of day, anything you need, because he's just a good-hearted kid. He really is.
I took the server down the other day, and I mean, I just totally hosed the website for the average guy. And I sent him a little message thinking he is just going to chew my butt for this. So, and he's like, he goes like, hold on. I think he was at school too, to be honest with you. And he goes, hold on. Okay, it's fixed. I mean, like that fast. And he logged in, restored. He had backed the whole thing up because he knew I was going to do this. And just restored it. It was done. And he's like, okay, you're back. And I thought, man, that's just incredible. So, Gary, you actually have your segment now on the show titled. So the chat room says it's going to be Gary's Get a Grip segment.
Yeah, there you go.
I like Gary's Get a Grip. So that's good. Well, appreciate it, guys. I'm going to let you go. Thanks. You guys have a great vacation. Andrew, we'll catch you this weekend around on Skype, I'm sure. So.
No worries, nice Jim.
With thanks Andrew. Thanks, Jim.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
See you, guys. See you, Gary. See you, Jim.
Good night.